This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
And welcome to Pod's Own Country, the Yorkshire Post political podcast. I'm Jerry Scott, the Yorkshire Post Westminster correspondent, and I'm joined today by Director of the Northern Powerhouse Partnership, Henry Murison. Now, look, Henry is a friend of the YP, and he's been on the podcast before, right back when we started. But I'm going to speak to him today about mayors, about devolution, about what the Northern Powerhouse actually is and what he would like to see from the budget on Wednesday. So let's get into it and see what he's got to say. Right, so we have expert all things Northern Powerhouse with us today. Henry, thank you so much for coming on Pod's Own Country. How are you doing?
Thank you, Jerry. It's great to come back.
Yes, of course, because you were one of the original guests on Pod's Own Country when we launched right back in, November 2019? And we sat in a boardroom, didn't we, in YP Towers with a few other people and chewed the fat. We've come quite a long way since then.
I know, and I mean, a lot has changed since then. And I think what's really interesting is just how much the things you talk about are now dominating not just the conversation in Yorkshire, but the wider national debate.
Oh, you flatter me. You're too kind. Look, there's loads and loads of stuff to get through today because you are right. This kind of stuff does dominate the national debate. And that's not me patting myself on the back. You know, issues that we've been speaking about for ages have come to the fore. And one of the big ones really is this idea of the Northern Powerhouse, of levelling up. It's a big question, but where are we with that idea of the Northern Powerhouse, do you think?
So I think, I mean, the people in the North haven't given up on it, right? Which is kind of the most important question. And sometimes people always default talking about what the government thinks. I think that is important, but I don't think it's the most important question, actually. So yeah, the business people, and actually more and more people who work in those businesses and wider people in civil society are pretty concerned about the impact of economic disadvantage on the people who live in the north of England and what that means for its future. And I think the Northern Powerhouse as a project, right, has now been along so long that it's not the government's sort of buzzword of the day. And in some ways, it probably makes it more relevant because the basis of it was always stuff that had been talked about a long time before George Osborne championed it. So it was always kind of around the Northern agenda on productivity and about economic rebalancing. And that's existed since the Northern Way and long before that. There's been attempts by government, but mostly by Northern leaders, to do something about these problems. So I think levelling up is the government's answer to try and speak to these issues. Whether or not they'll make a success of levelling up, who knows? Because it really depends on how much this government focuses on the economics and not just on the politics. And I think they're rightly focused on the politics. Every government is, and I'm sure the opposition are as well, in the way that they talk about these issues. But you have to think that there's also the need for an economic consensus for us to be able to actually do anything long-term in this space. And I think the public know that as well. They want people to make long-term sensible decisions. And so if it's all just about political kind of short-term management, keeping some backbenchers happy, few quid here for this place, a few quid here for that place because they happen to be marginal seats, eventually you get shown up for that. And even the people who might have been the beneficiaries of that, they don't actually think it's what they really want in the end. And I always use the example of, do people want a shiny new thing in their town centre, or do they want their kids to get a better job? And I think if people are asked to choose between those two things, they'll want meaningful economic change and not just things you can point to in a leaflet and say, look, I did that. And I think some of the smarter of the new intake MPs understand that as well, actually.
And you said something really interesting there, which I think is actually key to this, is there's a lot of party political point scoring around this, but actually for it to be successful, this has to be a cross-party situation, right? And I think some people get that, and we see that a bit more with kind of mayors, and we'll get on to mayors in a second, I'm sure. Do you get the sense that there is the ambition, I suppose, still for this to be a cross-party endeavour, or has the Northern Powerhouse levelling up become a bit of a political football?
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, the fundamentals people all agree about, right? So it's all started with a Tory Chancellor and a number of Labour leaders, one of them, Judith Blake, who now goes to the Lords. So some of these people are still around, but now with different jobs. And it was never just a Tory government, right? So people sort of go, kind of, the Tories, Northern Powerhouse. It's like, well, yeah, it was the idea of a Conservative Chancellor, but there were three local Labour leaders sat at the front in that speech. Nick and Judith and people who were the Labour leaders of the big council at the time all flew off to China with George Osborne. I mean, that was not expected, that a Conservative politician would make those sorts of links across the political divide, and then created jobs in those metro mayoralties, which were all expected to be Labour politicians. Obviously, Ben Houchen slightly beat expectations there, but they were all guessed that they'd be Labour politicians. And a number of people in the Tory party at the time were like, why are you creating all these new Labour politicians? And George was very clear about it, that it didn't really matter what party the people were. The point was that if they were delivering the agenda, which was to make those places more prosperous, then why would government not want to create them and work with those people? Because that's the bigger prize, is to get that economic productivity uplift and to get the better lives for people who live in those places as a result. And I think one of the best kind of ways to think about it, isn't it, is that if we can really make the North a more successful place to live, get many of the other opportunities people want, whether that's in education, skills, or in other areas, I'd love for people to all fight about who did it. Do you mean, was it me that achieved that? Was it you that achieved that? Do you mean, and arguing over who was responsible for the success is a great...
The YP won it, that's what we'd say.
Yeah, and let's have that argument when the time comes. But just kind of pointing and saying someone else has done a worse job of addressing inequality, I don't think is a fight anyone particularly wants to be in. And I think it's a challenge for Keir Starmer, who, if he's really going to try and challenge and say that what's been done so far isn't credible or isn't meaningful, well, what is his plan to devolve power and responsibility? So he talks about those things a lot and has set up a commission to do them. But we need to really see that he's going to go a significant distance, because obviously it's not uncommon for opposition politicians to make the case for localism, and then when they get into power, to become a tad more centralising. The irony of George Osborne, who I now work for, and I never thought I would have said that when I was a Labour politician in my misspent youth. I think he went to Whitehall as a minister and as Chancellor and got more decentralising, and that's an unusual thing to happen. So for an opposition, I would expect Labour to go a long way in demonstrating the type of state they want to create. And if they want to kind of meet the communities who wanted to take back control, that wasn't all about Brexit. So they're going to have some answers to people in places that do feel left behind about how they can take control of their own lives. And I think the decentralisation of political power and what comes with that, long-term tools to bring about economic and social change, that is something that I think will help communities that perhaps have walked away from the Labour Party to see that Keir Starmer and his team might have something relevant to say to them.
I think that's really interesting. And there's this commission, isn't there, like you mentioned, and Gordon Brown's heading it up to kind of look into what Labour's devolution agenda is going to be. And I think when that reports, when we finally get some kind of tangible results from that, it's going to be really interesting to put that side to side with the Conservative agenda for devolution. You know, we know that they're creating mayors, and see how they stack up. And I was really interested in that commission when it was launched, because it was sounded to begin with like it was really focused on nations. So, you know, Scottish devolution, devolution to Wales and Northern Ireland, stuff like that. But I spoke to South Yorkshire Metro Mayor Dan Jarvis a couple of weeks ago, and he had been in a meeting with Gordon Brown and, you know, said, no, actually, this is all about regional devolution as well. And we do get that. But I suppose, like you're saying, the proof is going to be in the pudding. We're going to want to see that report, aren't we?
I completely agree. And I think that where you've got to get to, isn't it, is that there are kind of some essential ingredients for the Northern powerhouse, which Jim O'Neill identified. So education skills, I mentioned, devolution, which we're talking about, the kind of big infrastructure projects, which people have all heard of, trains. People love to talk about trains. People love to talk about HS2 and Northern Powerhouse Rail. We will continue to talk about trains ad infinitum, and local transport like buses, and that great Devo power that people in Greater Manchester got for them, and then everyone else has had it, the power to franchise bus services, to take control of the buses, and pretty exciting and politically potent stuff if in the right hands. All of that needs to be in the round, right, of the sort of tools you need to be able to create more inclusive and dynamic economies. And I think that what is a powerful kind of counterpoint, I think, to some of this analysis is that it's very easy to have a conversation about political structures, and people in local government rightly like to talk about the principle of local democracy. People also like to talk about local economic development and how we can get local economies moving. You can't have those two conversations in abstract kind of opposition or kind of completely separate silos. And I think one of the challenges for this government is they talk the talk on devolution, but haven't necessarily gone as far as they could have done in terms of the pace of that, particularly more existing powers and use of existing powers and places with powers as part of the recovery. Who's going to lead the recovery that this budget's going to set out next week? I think that there's a real danger that might be done from the top, from Whitehall. And that would be a risk, I think, because I don't think central government's got a great record of spending money to stimulate demand the economy effectively. I think it can be done, and people like Peter Mandelson tried, right, in the build up to 2008. But I think if Peter Mandelson had access to a load of metro mayors with powers to invest and the ability to borrow money, if you let them do that, I think he would have trusted them to do more of what he tried to do from the centre, if that makes sense, when he felt that was the only alternative he had after the financial crisis. So I think you've got to think, kind of, how can you best achieve what we want to achieve? And I don't believe that thinking in abstractions about structures or thinking about making economies more prosperous in particular places in abstraction is a very good idea. I think you need to have those two conversations together. And I think that this government, if it gets it right, can bring those two things together. But the kind of the symbiotic thinking around economics and place, and that places are what drive the economy, and that more powers at the local level best used can stimulate growth and can help businesses to succeed, that isn't as close to the fore, I think, of how we respond to the recovery as we should be at the moment, and we're just not there yet.
Because I was going to say, because the point is, isn't it, is that recovery doesn't look the same everywhere, and we know, this is old ground, I don't want to spend too long on it, but we know that the North has been hit harder by the coronavirus, both, in terms of health inequality, in economic terms, as we've just been speaking about, in terms of just being under restrictions for longer. I was speaking to Labour's West Yorkshire mayoral candidate Tracy Braben earlier today, as we record, actually, and also MP for Batley and Spen, I should say. And she said, some areas of West Yorkshire have been basically under restrictions for almost a year since the last budget. So it's the case, isn't it, that the North really does have to be at the forefront of this recovery, more so than it ever might have had to been.
And I think it's an opportunity, right? So, this is like reruns of I Love Lucy for people who've never heard me talk or had the misfortune.
Or me as well.
One of my comment pieces in the Yorkshire Post, which I'm sure all read basically the same as the last one I wrote. But the kind of the challenge, isn't it, is you can't look at the current crisis outside the context of what came before it. So We know that wherever you live, that being poor and in poor quality housing has affected your outcomes. The same is true of economies, actually, which is if your economy was already subject to particular pressures and problems, then those things haven't gone away. And I think that particularly there are obviously parts of the country like London that have suffered hugely, and big city centres, of course, have had particularly dramatic impacts because they're dependent so much on office working, and that isn't happening at the moment. You're talking to me from your home, I'm talking to you from my home. This isn't where we would have been meeting. And Yorkshire Post Towers is just one example of a thriving building that is currently a lot quieter than it normally be. And those people are, as we've heard, not buying signs, mm-hmm. which was of huge concern to the government back last summer. So you've got to look at it and go, well, we could spend money going back to where we were before and just getting back to the same state we were in before. But then we'd still have to spend a load more money on economic rebalancing and on infrastructure we needed to be able to address the North-South divide. And I think the thing is, if you want to stimulate demand in the economy, investing in things that are going to have a long-term productivity benefit and helping businesses to start up and thrive with kind of patient capital and other ways of intervening to be able to create jobs for the people who've lost jobs, that is the way to spend it if you are going to spend money in this period. And don't think about the recovery and levelling up or economic rebalancing in the wider sense as completely separate, because the two have to be done together. Because I don't think we are going to be able to afford a recovery back to where we were before and then a long convoluted program of projects to get us to a more equal country. We're going to have to do those two things at the same time. And I think that fundamentally, if we can join together the recovery and that economic rebalancing, then that will work. And that's why the mayors should play a bigger role in leading the recovery, because if central government's going to struggle to do this on its own, why not ask for help? You've got these people there now. They weren't there in 2008. They are there now. Let's use them.
Yeah, and I wonder how much education ties into all that as well. We already know, don't we, that, you know, there is a education recovery lead, but like you say, that's a centralised role. That's a Whitehall-based role. We know the government's put money into this catch-up fund. We know that the 2021 exam results are going to be kind of teacher-assessed. So there are things happening, but Anne Longfield, outgoing, maybe now gone by the time this goes out, Children's Commissioner, has been really strong on this and said, you know, children in the north have actually suffered a lot more during the pandemic as well, because that education thing is so important too, isn't it? We talk about the economy and health outcomes, but the education part is key too.
I completely agree, and we've published some work in the last few weeks looking at the gap before the crisis, and it shows that the most long-term disadvantaged kids are really concentrated in many of the parts of the north. They are smattered across the rest of the country, but particularly those often white working class children from those most disadvantaged backgrounds who are kind of in poverty throughout their childhood, we know they're also the ones that have going to been hardest hit by having to learn from home remotely without access to their teachers. Because many of our northern schools, despite the challenges those kids face, do incredible work helping them to survive and thrive and do much better than that might be expected of them in so many cases. But take away their teachers, take away their time in school, and that puts them back massively compared to others who, this is the thing about learning loss, if you've been at home with plenty of devices and plenty of parental support, you haven't missed out anywhere near as much. And so the learning gap, the kind of learning loss, isn't a universal phenomenon. It's happened differentially. There have been some great examples. So in Barnsley, the local council there have funded Sheffield Hallam to send local ex-students, graduates out into schools to help provide mentoring support a lot broader and help sort of more rounded. And that was designed in partnership with local schools, whereas the government's programme was enforced top down. And a lot of schools have wanted something locally designed that meets their needs rather than just the national tutoring programme the government have provided. And so we've said really clearly, we think we need to expand that. That's what northern schools have needed. And if local government has stepped in to fund it, we should fund that across the north and give schools the option of having a mentor for every one of their year 10 and 11 students to support that year group in particular, this year's GCSE cohorts and next year's. Because if we're going to make sure those young people can then not just move on because they've got an exam result, but have the levels of learning they'll need to be able to take on future study, then they're going to need all the support they can get. And it's not just about purely knowledge or kind of spending more time teaching them stuff. It's also about giving them the support to be able to cope with what they're going through and the challenges they're facing, and particularly to help them think about what they're going to do next. Because if this is a more challenging world around us, a more difficult labour market, eventually when they leave, it's even more important those young people get every opportunity to take the choices and opportunities available to them and do the right things that are going to benefit their future. So I welcome Kevin Collins' appointment. I think having him in that role is great. I think it's better than the DfE lurching from decision to decision without a lot of strategy, because I think what we do need, and there's already been a move to more school choice and differentiation of what's done in each place, because actually the vast bulk of this is about what teachers do when they start getting kids back in a couple of weeks' time and how they're supported by head teachers and the rest of the community, right? to make a difference in their kids' lives. And whatever external intervention you might think of, however clever it is, and I'm not claiming that we or the National Tutoring Program are anything particularly special, because those are only things you can do on top of what is the most important, which is what teachers themselves do with their kids when they get them back in the room with them, and particularly what they do for those children in their classes who are from the most disadvantaged backgrounds. The problem the government has is they've not done enough to help those schools that have very high proportions of those sorts of children, because it's all very well if you've got a few of those kids in a class to really focus on them and their needs, give them the support they need. But if the vast bulk of your class or large percentages of your class are from the most disadvantaged backgrounds, you're as a teacher having to do a lot more than anyone else in education. And how we support those schools and those teachers is what's at the front of my mind. And I think it's certainly where we feel the business community, in the end, kind of along with civic leaders, made the Northern Powers Partnership exist and still drive our work. That's where they want us to focus, because they're interested in ensuring that education genuinely does give opportunities to all. And as long as we don't do that, we're consigning whole sections of society to not be able to fulfill their potential. And that's as much of a problem for the business community as it is an issue of kind of moral and fairness, because it isn't fair or moral for that to be how our society works. But it's also economically not sustainable. And for all those reasons, we need to address those challenges.
And I think that's interesting, because that's all kind of the stuff we, like you say, knew about already and has been highlighted. Some of the stuff we don't know about is like who's going to be in those positions to maybe change things. And, you know, we've spoken about devolution a bit already. We've had in the last week the announcement of the Conservative candidate for West Yorkshire Mayor. We've got the consultation open on North Yorkshire devolution. And these are people who may be able to change something, right? I mean, I guess to begin with, what are your reflections on those two particular areas? Although I'd say too, Harlan East Riding was brought up in the Commons as well this week. So it's all going on. We might have four mayors for Yorkshire soon. What are your kind of thoughts around that as it stands?
So, I mean, obviously we're very excited about more powers for existing mayors, but also about new mayoralties. And the reason for that is that once you get to 100% devolution across the north, then you don't need any sort of national beauty pageants or parades, whatever you're supposed to call them these days, for funding, because you can just give the money to Metro mayors, because they're the ones that have the legitimacy to spend money on these sorts of economic programmes. And so if nothing else, it saves loads of civil servants, lots of paper and paper clips, getting people to send them stuff and then reading it and then marking other people's homework and sort of playing teacher. We've all probably had enough of playing teacher in the last few weeks. Even maybe some civil servants would want to stop doing it when it comes to how they run their departments as well. And I think that the bit that I'm particularly excited about is that I think West Yorkshire has definitely suffered by not having a deal. Do you mean it's been really noticeable that the largest economy outside London, the Leeds City region, the centre of it, West Yorkshire, hasn't had a figure and all the powers and responsibilities that come with being a Metro mayor. And I mean, obviously, I particularly think that Susan Hinchcliffe, who chairs the Command Authority, figures like Judith Blake, now Baroness Blake, who we mentioned earlier, that all these people have been doing a great job. But I think that they are constrained by the fact that they don't have the same opportunities and funding that, say, Ben Houchen might have access to or Steve Rotherham has had. So West Yorkshire bucks very clever in the last few years, but this now gives them the same playing field.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think if we're frank, I don't think the government takes local leaders like that as seriously as they do a Metro mayor.
Well, it's really noticeable that now that she's acting mayor, Susan Hinchcliffe sits as equals with the Metro mayors, where West Yorkshire should have been the whole time. Does that make sense? Through the group of mayors that meets, and I think it's particularly positive to see one of the major parties select a prominent woman for one of these jobs. And I said a few months ago that I thought it would be a shame if it was only men contesting these elections, because we are in a real problem where across the country, not just the Mayor of London, but all of the Metro mayors are currently men. We've never seen a woman Metro mayor in the north of England yet. And I think that should change, and whether it changes in May or not, we'll find out based on what's going to happen in the next few weeks. But I think that what really strikes home with me is that these roles and opportunities are not just about the person or the office around them, They're about their ability to bring people together. And so what I think has always been really noticeable is the business community and others are really responsive to a clear economic vision and a vision of a place and where it's going. And if you want people to invest, then you need to be able to set that. And you can't do that effectively from Whitehall. So I think that certainly in this campaign, there'll be the opportunity for people to talk about what they're going to do to create the prosperity to make people's lives better and be able to invest more in public services. And more, I think the case has to be made for retaining the taxes we raise in our city regions so that there's a more direct connection between the success of our economy and the ability to invest in services and reinvest in communities. That's what I think we want to see as a country, where we do that, where local political leaders can take the difficult decisions, can prioritise, but can also share in the benefits of success when the things they do, the investments they make, allow businesses in their areas to be successful. And so that's why you do need to see more strong forms of fiscal devolution. And I think that the Chancellor would be right to say that this isn't just about kind of everyone getting an allowance. I mean, we're not looking to be teenage children, I mean, getting a few quid every month to spend as we see fit. I think we want to be a more traditional family, probably, in that we want people to earn their pocket money in the north of England. So I want our metro mayors to have money to spend, significant money, but I want them to have to levy some of that through taxation. That's not necessarily about new taxes, but we've suggested things like road user charging, other difficult, thorny issues. No one wants to tax motorists, but if you're taking away fuel duty, that probably makes you a bit more popular than you would otherwise be. But we need to make these difficult decisions and implement these new ways of, and fairer ways actually, of taxing people from the bottom up, so they have consent. And so people can also see where their money goes. Because if people thought the taxes they were spending were really influencing the local services they receive, I think people would be a lot more comfortable with paying the taxes they do. And we in this country rely on so much of our taxation revenues coming through national taxation, and we spend so little at the level of places. I don't just want to spend more at the level of the city region or the level of the kind of economic entity, so whether it's North Yorkshire or Hull and East Riding and on the other side of the river on the South Bank. These places need to have more economic responsibility. And I think certainly what the Yorkshire Post has done in championing that cause has been really appreciated, because it's an important debate. And it's one that I think, although the national newspapers are really excited about the red wall, the blue wall, whatever you want to call it, whatever day of the week, they haven't really thought through what it actually means and what people, if they were voting to take back control in that Brexit referendum, what they really wanted. And however many books are written by another London-based journalist writing for a national newspaper about the economic divide in this country doesn't necessarily get us any closer to an answer, because they still see it through the prism of the system they're part of. And uniquely, Jerry, you see it from both sides, right? You're inside the Westminster bubble, but you also have a foot outside it. And uniquely, you see both sides of this. And the telescope does look very different depending which end of it you look down.
It does. It is a one foot in, one foot out situation. It does kind of, you know, strike me often how the debate is still, yeah, very much framed around Westminster. I guess looking kind of forward, I'm thinking about, you know, when we speak about all these different devolution deals, by the time we get the next election in 2024, yes, I might be getting, accelerating the timetable a little bit, but we could be at or almost at the stage where there are four mayors representing the kind of four splits of Yorkshire. And that's a strong position to be in, right? Imagine, you know, we've spoken on various occasions about the One Yorkshire plan, and we know that's not on the cards at the moment, but still, to have four voices, if those four voices were in agreement and calling for something from government, I think it would be quite difficult for Number 10 to say no.
No, and it gets you away from the sense that your local politician is there to argue your case but can't actually do anything. And so at the moment, the leader of the council might be very supportive, but they don't have any money. Your local MP might be very supportive, but unless they can have a word with someone in a bar one evening, or I suppose these days it's in a coffee, over a coffee, isn't it? We've maybe moved on a little bit in terms of our decision making, but still, tea rooms or bars doesn't really change the fact that that's maybe not the best way to prioritise investment decisions. What you're really doing is you're electing someone to do a particular job, and you're giving them the tools to do that job, and they're directly responsible for you if they get it wrong. And so I think what's really interesting about mayoralties is that it isn't just about spending the money also will in the end be about being accountable for how you spent it. And I mean, to the extent the moment that if anyone really knows who the Secretary of State was 10 years ago who made a particular decision, if they ever get held up for what they did right or wrong, I'm really not sure. I think people still blame Andrew Lansley for his NHS reforms, but very few get tarred with something they actually did and genuinely identified as being responsible for it. Just doesn't work like that in British politics. This changes things, right? I mean, whether you like buying the airport in Teesside or not, you know who's responsible for it. Whether you think homelessness should be a bigger priority in Greater Manchester as it is, or whether you think Andy's going about fixing it the right way, you know that he's the person who's trying to do something about it, and you know where the buck stops. If he doesn't do anything or enough about homelessness, then people in May can give in their verdict. If they think that that's something he should have rightly focused on, he's made a difference, they can say that as well. And I think I'd be really interested at this first set of kind of rerunning mayoral elections. At the first time, of course, it was all based on party loyalty and pretty low turnouts. To what extent people judge the individuals, not just the party ticket, does that make sense? And to what extent does Steve Rotherham or Ben Houchen get rewarded or punished for their own decisions and what they've done or haven't done, considering what they promised they'd do? And I think what I think is interesting is I think overall, the mayors are all above par, right? So regardless of party, people all think their local mayor is making a better decision than someone else. And whether you think Andy was right to pick a fight with government back last year and whether he was correct or wrong about what he was trying to do, I think a lot of people in other parts of the country thought that actually they'd quite like someone to stand up and fight for them and to speak for them and to have somebody who genuinely can sort of be in the kind of the rooms, the front rooms, or on the end of the phone of the pub owner and the restaurant owner, and also be talking to the local NHS about what they think and can try and balance those competing interests, knowing the detail of what's going on locally. I think people quite want that. And I always kind of, people used to look funny at me when I said I thought that mayors were a good idea. It has not been a popular idea in many political parties, particularly in the Labour Party. When I was a local councillor, I was probably the only person in the world who thought, other than David Miliband, that mayors were a good idea. I thought they were a good idea when the previous Conservative Lib Dem government first proposed them, and I thought metro mayors were a good idea as well. So but it's not just about the individual, it's about what comes with it. And that's the trade-off, isn't it? More accountability comes with it, more political and economic control. And I think that's going to be good, not just for Yorkshire, but good for the north of England. And at that northern level, when it comes to building big projects, building Northern Powerless Rail from Leeds to Manchester, these big ticket items, of course, government will still play a role in those. But I think that having had leaders who were able to advocate for them, who were able to take some responsibility for trying to get them through, I think that is the right approach. And I think that there is also a case on some matters for government to work with these people. So not just leave them to it, but on some big national issues, but which have huge regional implications, to work in partnership. The same way Transport for London and the Mayor of London has worked with central government on big transport projects like Crossrail for decades now, since the Mayor of London was created back in the late 90s. So these are things that can be done. The question is, to what extent does the current Chancellor and his colleagues take this seriously and grasp the nettle? I think certainly the current Chancellor gets it. Whether the rest of the Cabinet do, we remain to see.
I'm glad you said that about Rishi Sunak, actually, because we do have the budget coming up on the 3rd of March. That is it, isn't it? Yes, the 3rd of March. And it's interesting that you say he does get it. Are you expecting some little treats for the north and the budget, or do you not know? I know you do speak to Rishi sometimes.
No, I mean, I think that the Chancellor hasn't got a lot of wiggle room, right? And this budget is more about the tomorrow and the today than it is about the long term, and that's understandable. I think that we would expect that if there is a role for economic rebalancing as part of the answer to the crisis and how we build back better, to take now a Byrne and Boris phrase, I suppose we should credit it as it's been nicked by the Prime Minister from Andy. So if that is the path they decide to go on, you might not get the whole way along the path. Do you mean, I think you'll only see the first kind of direction of travel signs. But as much as kind of Treasury North and relocating civil servants, all that's welcome, right? But that isn't really going to cut it. I mean, that's a good idea, welcome proposals, But the really big ticket items are some of those big infrastructure schemes, and not just the budget, but we're also likely to see something called the Integrated Rail Plan, which is sort of kind of like the height of policy excitement for your average transport nerd like me. And that will come out probably within a couple of weeks of the budget, we expect, before the mayoral elections. And that's probably actually a bigger test of the government's commitment to the Northern powerhouse than what is in the budget. So, of course, political commentators, everybody else watches the budget. It has some theatre to it. It's important. I think it will be largely about extending the current support that's been available. Largely, that's not a huge event, actually. It's kind of almost, you could almost write some of that now in terms of people's response to it. But some of the previous things the Chancellor's done, like the review of the Green Book, are very significant and meaningful. And so he comes into this budget, unlike many other members of the Cabinet who maybe haven't done enough yet in this space, he's already above par. That makes sense. So he doesn't have to deliver kind of a box of sweeties for people to be excited, if that makes sense, because he already has demonstrated he gets it. And what he and the Prime Minister and others around the Cabinet table choose to do around the future of the eastern leg of HS2, around whether Northern Powerhouse Rail gets built at all, whether it goes through Bradford, these are kind of probably more significant tests of the government than what's in an individual budget, in what will be probably quite a limited agenda. And I think that the next steps around the role that mayors are given, for instance, in the recovery, you might be able to see some signs of that, some kind of green shoots, a direction of travel. And I think a direction of travel is probably as important as kind of anything huge and big ticket, because in this particular budget, with so much uncertainty, I doubt we'll see everything that we could ever want to see, if that makes sense, because it's just not the time for the Chancellor to be able to do those things.
Yeah, I don't envy his position at the moment. I was in the press gallery in the Commons for last year's budget, and then obviously it all got kind of blown out the window within probably about the space of a week, and this year he's got, no wiggle room at all. So, not ideal for Rishi. It's going to be really interesting on Wednesday, and I am sure that I will be on the phone to you finding out what you think about it then. Henry, thank you so much for coming on Pod Zone Country. It's been really good to have you on.
Thanks for having me back.
Thank you so much for listening to Pod Zone Country, the Yorkshire Post political podcast. I've been Jerry Scott, the Yorkshire Post Westminster correspondent, and we'll be back next week with another episode. In the meantime, you can find us wherever you usually find your podcasts, whether that is iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, whichever is your favourite. You should be able to find us on there. And look, it really, really helps us when you leave us a review, when you subscribe, when you tell your friends, when you look us up on Twitter. I'm at Jerry_E_L_Scott. It really helps to boost us in the charts and get us more well known by more people. Hopefully speak to you soon.